Thanks for downloading the free feed of Sunday Night's Main Event. If you'd like the entire show commercial-free, please sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Canada's premier wrestling radio program. This is Sunday Night's Main Event, and it's our first official show of 2020. Yep, the holidays are done. The best and worst of 2019 roundtable shows are out of the way, and now we're diving headfirst into whatever there is to come in the world of pro wrestling in the new year. First things first, the North American wrestling calendar always begins with my favorite WWE signature event, and that is the Royal Rumble. And we had a big development this past week with Brock Lesnar announcing he'll be the first entrant. We'll take a look at what that means for the Rumble, for the future of Lesnar, and for the road to WrestleMania. And there are a lot of potential angles to be set up with this one announcement. But before we get to the Rumble, the Japanese wrestling calendar always starts with the New Japan Wrestle Kingdom event at the Tokyo Dome. And since we weren't live the last couple weeks, Dan the Mouth of Ransky spent his entire holiday break watching both nights of Wrestle Kingdom as well as New Year's Dash, so he'll join us later in the show to give us the highlights of those shows, including Jushin Liger's retirement, Naito as the first ever double champion, as well as all the angles coming out of those three nights. Dave Meltzer will also return to the program tonight to chat about his trip to Wrestle Kingdom and look at some interesting developments with AEW and New Japan, the status of Marty Scurll in ROH, as well as WWE's plans for WrestleMania. And lest we not forget, NXT UK presented a pay-per-view earlier today. And since it's Bartender Dave's favorite product, he'll join me to chat NXT UK TakeOver Blackpool 2 later in the show and how that pay-per-view may affect what we see on Royal Rumble weekend. And one final thing before we get into the actual show. Why did I wake up to a Facebook feed of RJ City in his underwear, standing beside Stone Cold Steve Austin? Well, my best non-wrestling performer of 2019 will be on later to tell us why Stone Cold let RJ into his home to have coffee, or not have coffee, if you've seen the clip. So stay tuned for that later in the show. We're going to take a break right now and then dive into this week in wrestling news when we come back. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. You're doing so on TSN Radio.
Here in Canada, we have several regionally specific phrases that arise when said vernacular is considered appropriate, i.e., the funny-sounding term, shinny. Shinny is a game of ice hockey played without the standard head-to-toe body armor. Instead, only skates, gloves, a hockey stick, and preferably a helmet is worn. And if you're Mike Lackey, GLB's brewmaster, you wear the same pair of shinny pants day in and day out from December until March. A common code of ethics is employed during a game of shinny. For example, raising the puck off the ice is strongly discouraged for fear of being struck in the shins or worse, elsewhere. However, the most common practice takes place off the sheet of ice. Mandatory post-shinny beverages with your team, and boy does Great Lakes Brewery have the beer for that. Shinny Pants Session Stout, a beer inspired by Mr. Lackey's well-worn and well-stained pants.
Aw man, you spilled beer on my shinny pants, bud.
Shinny Pants Session Stout. Drink it fresh, please.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Welcome back. It's Sunday Night's Main Event. First episode of 2020 here. We've done the roundtables for the past couple weeks, so let's get you updated with what has been happening. And what's been happening on WWE TV? A series of returns over the holidays, including The Big Show this past Monday and Sheamus and the Usos last Friday. And yes, even John Morrison made his return to WWE TV and was absolutely wasted, in my opinion, by reuniting him with The Miz. But more on that later in the show. Well, this past week on SmackDown, we saw the return of Robert Roode after serving his 30-day wellness policy suspension, which, honestly, Must have been pretty nice for him, considering it fell during the Christmas break. He hopped back into the SmackDown world on Friday night, stopping Roman Reigns from powerbombing Baron Corbin through a table. No word, however, on the whereabouts of Primo Cologne. Still not back on WWE TV after serving his 30-day. Looking ahead to the Royal Rumble in 2 weeks' time, current official entrants to the Men's Rumble are at 13. Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, AJ Styles, Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio, Ricochet, Eric Rowan, Drew McIntyre, Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler, Elias, Otis and Tucker of Heavy Machinery. And as you know, Lesnar is entrant number one, which I will go in-depth on in the very next segment. Now, along with that, Reigns and Corbin are both working double duty at this pay-per-view. It was announced on SmackDown this past Friday that Reigns and Corbin will face each other in a singles match at the pay-per-view and take part in the Rumble. Because that's what the card needs, more Reigns and Corbin. Now, as for the women's side of things, it's very light as of right now with only three confirmed entrants into the Rumble: Alexa Bliss, Nikki Cross, and of course, Charlotte Flair. My main question is, originally we had heard that there was supposed to be 10 SmackDown performers, 10 Raw performers, and 10 NXT performers. And to this point, we have heard absolutely no mention of NXT being involved in the Royal Rumble. So I'm curious if that is still in place. Now, as far as the Women's Rumble goes, though, maybe we shall see Mercedes Martinez in the Royal Rumble, as it was announced this week that the 39-year-old longtime independent wrestling star has signed a deal with WWE. Martinez was, of course, part of the Mae Young Classic and also did a few jobs on NXT TV, but curiously, her last appearance was for AEW as part of the Casino Battle Royal at All Out last August. Let's face it, that women's division could really use her. But she's in WWE and no details as to where she's going to end up on the roster, but it does look like she'll start at the Performance Center next week. In a very cool move by WWE NXT, it was announced this week that Kushida's tag team partner for the Dusty Classic will be Alex Shelley. Yes, indeed, the Time Splitters will be making their NXT debut. So that means the Time Splitters will take on NXT's UK's Grizzled Young Veterans in the first round, with the winner going on to meet the Undisputed Era, who defeated Gallus in the first round of the Dusty Classic. On the other side of the bracket, we have Imperium. They defeated the Forgotten Sons on NXT this week. They'll now take on the winner of a match that could have very well been the finals of the tournament, at least in my opinion. It's the former NXT UK tag champs, Flash Morgan Webster and Mark Andrews, who I love, versus a team that I may even love more than that, the mismatched team of Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne, a.k.a. the Broserweights. And I don't know if there was anything better on TV this week than Matt Riddle telling us how this team came about.
And when I went to form this team with Pete, I went up to him and I was like, "Hey, Pete, I'm a bro. You're a Bruiserweight, Dusty Cup. Let's do this." He gave me the Pete special. I gave him the bro special. He nodded, and the Bruiserweights were born.
Matt Riddle means an instant smile on my face each and every time that guy cuts a promo. He's so different. He's so fun. Getting back to the Dusty Classic, though, I'm thinking the Time Splitters pull an upset win over Undisputed, then go on to beat the Broserweights when they implode in the finals. That's going to then set up Riddle versus Pete Dunne in a feud. And the Time Splitters, they get to win the Dusty Classic this year and then obviously make their way to feuding with Undisputed Era. Personally, I think that works for booking. It would be nice to see. We'll see how they go about. But with teams like Time Splitters and the Broserweights in, hey, this is a fun tournament. In the Wednesday night ratings news this week, Dynamite got the win with a 947,000 people average audience to NXT's 721,000. In NWA Power news, in case you missed it, Big Pop Pump is a part of NWA Power. Yep, at the end of the episode this week, an angle was set up between Nick Aldis and Ricky Morton where they would each be putting a tag team together of three performers. And Aldis announced the wild cards as two members of his team, and then Scott Steiner entered the arena as the third man of his team to end the episode. Not sure if this is a great move for the organization, but I guess they needed anything they can do to draw people into getting their next pay-per-view entitled Hard Times. That's taking place on Friday, January 24th. Far, far too soon. But that's just my opinion. Bandido has re-signed with Ring of Honor. And in even more interesting news, Dave Meltzer has reported this week that Marty Scurll is also close to re-signing with the company for a big deal that would also involve him working in New Japan and NWA, but most interestingly, would not close the door to him working with AEW. I'm going to ask Dave about that in the second hour of today's show, because Scurll all over the place seems good upon first look, but if you're a promotion, don't you want exclusivity? That is a question I shall pose. To go along with that, it was announced on Thursday that the ROH Supercard of Honor will take place at the RP Funding Center in Lakeland, Florida on Saturday, April 4th. That is, of course, WrestleMania weekend. Villain Enterprises, complete with PCO, Marty Scurll, Brody King, and Flip Gordon, have been advertised for the event. Now, to go along with the ROH news, just last night we also saw the link between Ring of Honor and NWA once again come about, as Nick Aldis showed up at the ROH Center Stage event in Atlanta, Georgia, and continued his feud with Marty Scurll. Aldis appeared at the end of the show, coming in through the crowd disguised as a policeman, and attacked Marty Scurll from behind. He posted Scurll into the turnbuckle and then left the ring, leaving through the crowd. So it looks like there's some sort of relationship happening once again with ROH and NWA. In our social media stories of the week, well, the first one, Miz and CM Punk went at one another and said bad things to one another. We'll leave that as is because I can't read the quotes on the air. But just yesterday, Tessa Blanchard decided to tweet out the following. Hey women, try supporting one another. Cool things happen. Seems like a nice sentiment, except when things pop up from your past. Because this didn't sit well with many, many female performers that have worked with Tessa in the past. I can't go into reading all the tweets in the exchange, but there is a lot of them. Just a storm of anger hit in regards to Tessa's attitude. Allison Kay, Chelsea Green, La Rosa Negra, Shanna, Isla Dawn, and Priscilla Kelly all then accused Tessa of bullying, racism, verbal abuse, and even spitting on them. It's a lot of bad press leading into the Impact pay-per-view that she is main eventing. But, I mean, then again, perhaps any press is good press for a promotion that gets no press. That's Impact Wrestling I'm talking about, of course. Well, with GLOW no longer much a wrestling-themed show on Netflix, that void may be filled with a new series picked up by NBC called Young Rock. The show is inspired by Dwayne The Rock Johnson's early life, and Johnson is both the exec producer and will also appear in all of the 11-episode deal. I'm not sure what age they start at, whether this is like, you know, the Chris Rock show, Everybody Hates Chris, or if they're getting into his teen years. That I don't think has come out at this point. It is just based around The Rock, and he's going to appear, so people are definitely going to be curious about it, because everything The Rock does seems to be pretty damn good. A couple of notes of passings to end this week's news. Jesus Huerta Escoboza, who was the most recent La Parca, passed away on Saturday night from complications of a near-fatal ring accident in October. Huerta was the second La Parca. This is not the performer you may have seen in the 90s in WCW. That character was played by a wrestler known as Adolfo Tapia. Due to naming rights and complications, he is now known as LA Park. Now, we reported back on October 21st, 2019, that Escoboza was in a match with Rush and did a tope. He missed and hit his head on the floor and the guardrail. He was paralyzed and rushed to the hospital. He underwent surgery the next morning, which was described as life-saving. However, he had never really recovered from his injuries. Escoboza was believed to be 55 years of age at the time of his passing. Now, earlier this week, we also had the passing of Juan Cashmanian, known to wrestling audiences of the 60s and 70s as Pampiro Firpo. He passed away at the age of 89. Firpo had two runs as a headliner in Madison Square Garden, the first in the early 60s as the partner of the Great Antonio, and second in 1972 as a rival to then WWF champion Pedro Morales. He also had a run in Detroit in the 70s versus performers such as The Sheik and Bobo Brazil. While not known to many in the modern era, Firpo was the wrestler that Randy Savage copied his interview style and voice from. Even the classic "Ooh yeah" catchphrase came from Firpo. So there you go. His legacy lived on with Randy Savage, and really one of the most popular catchphrases of all time, traces its roots back to Pampiro Firpo. We are going to take a break, but before we do, just wanted to let you know, with the Royal Rumble coming up, I'm going to talk a lot about that event in the next segment, but also that means it's Rumble Strikes time. Yes, indeed, Rumble Strikes will be happening again. That is, of course, the wrestling slash Royal Rumble themed comedy show. It's taking place at Comedy Bar in Toronto. I will be hosting the show, as I do each and every comedy event. If you're a patron at the comedy level, then you already have two tickets reserved for you. If you're not a patron at that level, you can pick up your tickets at snmeradio.com. This show is like where Whose Line Is It Anyway meets Fear Factor meets the WWE Royal Rumble. I go to the extent for this show where I actually purchase a bingo tumbler, like the classic Royal Rumble vignettes, and I twirl that tumbler and people pick numbers, and that is their order of play for the show. We eliminate it on down, starting at 6, down to 2 people, and they play the Mousetraps improv game at the end of the show. It is a super fun night. I love hanging out and chatting with all you guys. And by the way, this time around, it will be a number one contenders match. I have confirmed former champions, Marty Adams, Jamie Kavanaugh, and Scott Goldman will return. They will face 3 new competitors that have never played before. And the winner of that will be the number one contender for our current champion, Hannah Holubek's title at Strikes of Mania. That is happening the Friday before WrestleMania. So once again, Rumble Strikes is happening on Friday, the 24th of January. Get your tickets right now at snmeradio.com. For anyone in the GTA, it is at Comedy Bar in Toronto at 11 p.m. on the 24th. Get it! We're going to take a break and come on back. Next, let's take a look at the Brock Lesnar situation in the Royal Rumble, and also the week that was in wrestling. You know Brandi Rhodes is going to come up. I can't let that go. That is next, right here, Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio. And we'll never be royals.
If you're a fan of Sunday night's main event, check out WrestlingObserver.com, a daily podcast, multiple podcasts per day, with hosts Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, and a number of others. You get a full library of podcasts dating back to 2005, over 9,000 shows, hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter dating back to 1991, and so much more. Don't miss out. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
My client, Brock Lesnar, enters the Royal Rumble match first. Which means Brock Lesnar takes the ring first. Brock Lesnar will be standing victorious in the ring last.
Brock Lesnar! Brock Lesnar! Oh, yes! Brock Lesnar has won the rumble!
1 is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. 2 can be as bad as 1. It's the loneliest number since the number 1.
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event, and that right there, probably the event of the week, perhaps aside from the Miz Punk thing on Twitter and maybe yesterday's Tessa thing on Twitter, but honestly, much of the online talk this week and speculation that went on in the world of wrestling had to do with Brock Lesnar being announced as the number one entrant in the Royal Rumble, and I follow that up with Rumble 2003. That is when Lesnar actually won the Rumble. Will he win again? That's the question that a lot of people have been asking. And initially, when I heard this angle, you know, I wasn't sure it made sense. Originally, I was like, why would Lesnar put himself in this situation? Why would he put the title up for grabs? But the title is not up for grabs. Instead, what this looks like to me is really WWE had no challenger ready for Brock Lesnar for WrestleMania. If it's going to be Rollins or Reigns, that's a rehash of stuff that we've seen. And I surely hope that neither one of those men is involved in this scenario of going after Lesnar's title. Because to me, that is, if that is your main event of WrestleMania, that is like a fart in church. Like this, it's just not going to fly. I suppose the crowd may enjoy it, but it's something we've seen already. And I think that one of the things that wrestling fans are really seeking nowadays is a fresh matchup. And by putting Lesnar in this situation where he's going to have interactions with a whole bunch of different people in the Royal Rumble, you can have different scenarios present themselves and then come up with a new contender to be put in place for Lesnar's title. Plus, you can also have a different person to go forth and win the Rumble to go on to challenge Bray Wyatt the Fiend. That is, as my mind got rolling here, unless Lesnar wins the Rumble and then wants to unite those two titles and goes ahead and challenges the Fiend. But in my opinion, that is a giant mistake. And let me just throw out how big a mistake the Fiend versus Lesnar would be at Mania to me and probably you who listen to this podcast. The Fiend, sure, one of the most talked about characters this year, but not necessarily for all the right reasons. I mean, he's listed as both, for some people, both the best and the worst character of last year. And what I would worry about putting The Fiend and Lesnar in the main event at Mania is The Fiend has the ability to ruin other wrestlers that he is in the ring with, such as Seth Rollins. I mean, think about what that feud did to Seth Rollins. It made him incredibly dislikable. And I know Rollins didn't do himself any favors here, but the way that he was booked in that match, and also it depleted his moveset. Think about how many curb stomps that he performed on The Fiend. So if that happens to Lesnar, is that the way these things are going to go? Just F5 after F5 after F5? And The Fiend's going to keep getting up? I don't want to see that. Do you want to see that? As a listener of this show, I'm guessing you probably don't. Now, a lot of names have come up if that isn't the road they go down, and I really do hope it's not. But, you know, names like Drew McIntyre to Kane Velasquez to one of my favorites that I've heard is a returning Edge. So if nothing else, at least people are talking about this. And it's not in a negative way of saying, oh, Lesnar's going in, I'm not interested. Actually, you know, if you think of Lesnar as a bit of a stale character, and I'm sure you do, we've heard that numerous times, and Heyman kind of stale beside him, this has at least conjured up a little bit of interest in the Brock Lesnar character. And you have a lot of people going outside the box and trying to fantasy book this, whether it's, yeah, the returning Edge, the returning CM Punk, Matt Riddle, Keith Lee, all of these people are now possibilities for Brock Lesnar. And because there are some fresh matchups out there, it sparks conversation. It sparks fantasy booking. And really, when it comes right down to it, that's key for WWE to put out there, to get wrestling fans interested. Now, the follow-through, well, that's a whole nother discussion. But I did put this up there as feedback to see what you would like out of the Royal Rumble and for Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and we'll do that in the final segment of tonight's show. But also on Monday night...
And now, wait a minute, I'm trying to pick up the scraps off the distraction. They're looking for that hammerlock DDT center of the ring. Andrade into the cover, and Andrade retains the United States title.
Wait a minute.
Andrade just ripped off the mask of Rey Mysterio. The ultimate sign of disrespect.
We had Rey Mysterio and Andrade on Raw this week. Now, these guys have very good chemistry together, as we saw on SmackDown last year or the year before, whenever they ended up colliding a few times and had some great matches. Unfortunately, this past week, they had a botched finish in the match, but let's look beyond that. I mean, that can happen. You have at the end of this match, Andrade pulling off Mysterio's mask. This actually excited me. I have been waiting for Andrade and Mysterio to have either a hair versus mask match, maybe a title versus mask match. And then, once again, let's talk about follow-through, because apparently that's not happening. Brian Alvarez reported middle of the week that they are not doing a mask versus hair match. They're not doing a mask versus title match. Why throw this out there? Why have Andrade pull off the mask if the mask doesn't become part of the subject? Beat him down, leave Ray lying, whatever, bring Zelina Vega into the program. But if you're going to touch the mask, if you're going to demask Ray, then it has to be a part of the storyline. And it's a classic storyline. losing the mask, it makes total sense to do. And sometimes old wrestling stipulations and old conventions can work. And this is one of those times. That mask, even though, yes, it's been off Ray in WCW, that mask means a lot to him. And if there is meaning behind the mask, then there can be meaning behind the match. They really should let this play out. And honestly, I am confused why WWE is not headed in this direction, despite teasing it on TV this week.
John Morrison, from the bottom of my heart, welcome back.
It feels so good to be back. When I saw what you were going through and we had that talk after I was on the bump, I come to think there's nothing more important than being there for one of your best friends.
There's been a series of returns on WWE TV over the past couple weeks. We saw Big Show this past Monday, and as I mentioned in the news, the Usos are back, Sheamus as well. But one who's been away for the longest and has returned is John Morrison. John Morrison has been away from the WWE since 2011. And when he came back, just a couple weeks ago, not only has nothing been made of his work outside of WWE, there's been no references to that, but along with that, he is ducking right back into a storyline where he's Miz's tag team partner. This was a storyline. These two were paired together from 2007 to 2009. I know John Morrison is not going to be a main event guy, but honestly, there could be some really fun mid-card stuff that could have gone on with him. He could have made, pardon the pun, but a much bigger impact when he returned. What I took out of this is it really reminded me of the way Bubba Ray Dudley or the Dudley Boys were brought back into WWE. Time just stopped in Vince McMahon's head as to when they left and when they came back, so much so that they returned with the glasses. And I found the same thing just happened with Morrison. This guy has definitely moved well beyond what he was in WWE at the time of as he left. He's an athletic wrestler, he's an exciting wrestler, and he's been away so long that I do feel he could have come back and been much more important rather than just being Miz's buddy, a tag team guy. Now he's doomed for the mid-card. Like, this is going to be his peak. Working with The Miz and then turning on The Miz is now his peak for his return in WWE. And to me, when you're just looking for anything fresh, and I keep saying that word, fresh, because I'm looking for new things, and everything old can be new again, but honestly, let the guy have at least reference his growth as opposed to sticking him right back where he was when he left. You're immediately making this character stale all over again, rather than expanding and letting the growth that he had outside of WWE actually show itself in the current product.
If I have to explain that, Exhibit has to explain why he's wearing a mask at commentary. Does anybody ever ask that question? You look ridiculous. Do you ever take that thing off?
I do.
Do you shower?
I do, yes.
Do you take it off to shower?
Yes. Thank God.
Man, it's very nice of you guys to play along this little game with him. Are you that ugly that you have to wear that?
I was a professional wrestler, grew up in the Lucha Libre tradition. That's why I wear the mask, Brandon.
Love to see what you look like without it.
All right. Well, you knew I had to mention it. That was a clip from Brandi Rhodes on commentary this week on AEW. Listen, I know she's a heel, but honestly, there's no need to put down two competitors in the ring. There's ways of pushing the competitors in the ring, but saying the person you manage is better than them. There's also no need to put down, in particular, this women's division in AEW, which is already highly criticized. It's already struggling. Brandi's supposed to be in charge of it, at least behind the scenes, and she goes on the air on commentary and then just craps all over it. And on top of it, the clip I played there, repeatedly calling Excalibur Exhibit and then making fun of his mask, calling him ugly. Wow. So basic. Go sip your pumpkin spice latte, Brandi, because you are basic. You lowered yourself by doing this angle. There's a real irony here, since the more Brandi tries to get away from being Cody's wife and who she actually is,
the more she tries to make herself stand out and be special, in actuality, the more she's falling into every wrestling cliche and being exactly what she doesn't want to be. Follow me along with this. Brandi is a below-average actress, now playing an over-the-top generic cult leader heel character that doesn't belong on AEW TV. And in fact, the only reason she's on the air, and all of the fans know this, the only reason she is allowed to do this character is because she's Cody's wife. And everyone watching knows that. So by trying to get away playing Cody's wife, all you're doing by doing this character is making it oh so evident to every fan watching that you are Cody's wife, and that is the only reason she's on the air and allowed to do this character, and it has no place. All right, rant done. Let's talk about some stuff that was good on AEW this week.
I was just kidding.
What?
I would never join the Inner Circle.
What?
It's a stupid group. You have nothing that I want. Except for that.
Moxie and Jericho did their confrontation. We knew where this was going. To me, it took far too long to get there. I don't know if they were stretching out for TV time, but it was fine. It would had humor in certain places, and it was okay. One thing I was disappointed about, though, with AEW this week was the fact that they made a big deal about the Memphis Legends tribute, and I'm sure there's going to be more on AEW Dark this week, but Dave Brown on commentary in the first match, I like that. He seemed in awe of the new product. I am glad he wasn't there the entire show. And then the only other thing we got about Memphis was an interview between Lanny Poffo and Alex Marvez. And let's face it, anything with Alex Marvez is going to be awful. They could have used a highlight package of the tribute, just shown some of the guys that they were there. I've enjoyed the continuous tease of Hangman turning heel. That makes sense. It's moving along really well. We also had the MJF and DDP confrontation this week. I like the idea of DDP. To me, the self-promo was way over the top, but I've had DDP on this show, and his self-promo is always way over the top. Everything these two did in the ring also seemed kind of scripted and awkward, but I am curious to see what they're going to do this week with DDP. If you have not seen the listing, it will be a six-man tag match. DDP, Dustin, and QT Marshall versus Butcher and the Blade and MJF. Don't really like the fact that Butcher and Blade are so close to MJF. I hold MJF in very high regard, and having Butcher and the Blade and the Bunny around him, to me, that's a failed gimmick that should not be at this level with MJF. So, curious to see how these six work together. Before we go, I did want to mention one absolute highlight, I would say, of the night, and I would say of my week. We continually talk about the fact that AEW tries to do a split screen, unsuccessfully, for the most part. You can't really pay attention to what's going on in the split screen. You don't have audio, and when I say split screen, I mean during the commercials, you still see the feed of AEW. This week, we all saw that challenge completely overcome by Sammy Guevara. Sammy Guevara doing his best Bob Dylan Subterranean Homesick Blues impression with the cue cards during the break just to flirt with Selma Hayek was incredible. I stayed tuned the entire commercial break, and my eyes were completely fixated on what Guevara was doing. On top of that, it's a great pop culture reference, because if you saw the Golden Globes last week, number one, you remember Ricky Gervais and his monologue. Number two, you remember Selma Hayek's dress, because it was phenomenal. And I just thought that coming up with a way to actually make use of that commercial break, Guevara staying in character, throwing the signs up, Swagger just standing behind him. It's the little things sometimes, guys. I thought this was ingenious. And honestly, I want to see more. I want to see what he's going to do this week. So I hope it becomes a gimmick that he comes down to the ring with a whole bunch of signs and boom, sends a message out. This was great. I know it seems silly, but this was great. Gonna take a break. Gonna come back. Let's talk Japan. Dan the Mouth of Vransky joins me next. We'll talk Wrestle Kingdom Night 1 and Night 2. And along with that, New Year's Dash. Lavransky has watched them all. That report is next right here. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio. Hey, look out, kid. It don't matter what you did, but walk on your tiptoes. Don't.
Dan the Mouth Loransky.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old fucks, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty farts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday Night's Main Event at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we're the old fucks, tough guy.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event, and as I was mentioning earlier in the show, Wrestle Kingdom 14 took place on January 4th and 5th. We were doing our roundtable shows, but since that gave my co-host a little bit of time off, and I'm pretty sure Dan the Mouth Loransky spent all his time over the holidays watching Japanese pro wrestling. Is this the truth, Mouth?
It's very true, Jay. I watched, not only did I watch both days of Wrestle Kingdom, I also watched New Year's Dash, because they often do big angles leading into the beginning of the year. So yeah, it was a heavy duty weekend of New Japan.
Well, first of all, I think that the first thing I want to talk about here is not only was it Wrestle Kingdom one night and then New Year's Dash a night, there were two nights of Wrestle Kingdom. That's two shows. This is the first time this has happened. And as a fan, I mean, it looks like New Japan is onto this more is more thing. Now, do you think it was successful to do two nights back to back?
It's a tough one. I mean, I think if you had really combined some of the big elements from both shows and put it in one, it would have been better. But by the same token, at least they did use day two to kind of move angles forward and setting things up for New Year's Dash. My only problem with it is you get too many of those eight-man tag matches on the undercard, and that, to me, I think it's a little bit more than you need. But I at least they did make use of the second show to kind of push things for the third one.
So now do you think that this will happen again? Do you think it'll happen again? And do you want it to happen again? Because I think that those are two distinctly separate questions when talking about these events going on.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, it depends for New Japan. If they considered it to be successful, and both shows did sell really, really good. There was a huge amount of people, over 100,000 people over the 3 days. So they might go that route again. Personally, myself, I like it as one kind of special show where you just really get all your top guys in and you get your really top stellar matches that kind of, you know, like the way that WrestleMania is supposed to be. Here in North America. So I myself personally, I would cut it down to one day, but if it was super successful, I could see them doing it again next year. I could see it becoming a tradition if it was successful.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that WWE, you know, behind the scenes, they've had this discussion of splitting WrestleMania into two shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is there's a lot of pomp and circumstance around WrestleMania now with not only the one night, but you add in the Hall of Fame, which, by the way, this year is going to be on the Thursday because they've got SmackDown on the Friday, which they're, I think, contractually obligated to do. Then they'll do NXT on the Saturday, then Sunday, and with WrestleMania, and then Monday with Raw. So it's kind of like WWE, even though they don't say WrestleMania is spread out over 2 days, it's really spread out over four.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I don't think they could take any chances and make it any bigger than it is already.
One of the biggest stories at Wrestle Kingdom, though, is, of course, the retirement of Jushin Thunder Liger. Now, this was a tag team match. Do you think this should have been done in a singles match as opposed to a tag?
You know what, Jay? I do not have an issue with it being a tag match because, really, for the last few years, that is what Jushin Liger has been involved in. He very rarely has a singles match anyways. He's usually in with a bunch of younger new guys to help get them over and stuff. And he's always at the beginning of the card at this point anyways. So I didn't really have a big problem with that, especially since he put over guys in both the matches, the one on day one and the final one on day two. He put over new guys, so I don't really have a problem with it, and I don't think it was disrespectful to him in any way.
My second question, actually, is the fact that Liger did put over guys. Would you have preferred him to see him win the final match and, like, get the pinfall?
No.
No, you
no. No, this is how it works in Japan, Jay. This is the exact way that New Japan does anything. Anytime anyone usually has a retirement match, except if it's someone like Inoki who stretches it out over a whole year or something. But this is the way it goes. This is the kind of the way you do it. You do the job for the person on your way out. It certainly does not hurt your career. His legacy is not tainted by losing his final matches. Far from it. In fact, he's probably going to get even more respect because of what he did. So, I don't have any kind of issue with that. That's the tradition in Japan. And I think a lot of North American fans didn't really understand that, because I saw a lot of complaining afterwards that he didn't win his final match. And it's his job on the way out to help put someone over. I mean, think of it. These guys now have on their resume that they beat Jushin Liger in his final matches. That's going to help any young guy move up the ladder, and also creates a connection to the fans.
Now, you mentioned North America perception there, and leading into this event, there was much discussion around the Jericho and Tanahashi match. Jericho had stated if Tanahashi defeated him on the card, he'd get a shot at his AEW title. Now, ultimately, that didn't happen. The fact that the AEW title, though, was referenced and used in the angle brought about speculation of the door being open just a crack for New Japan and AEW to work together again. Did that add to the match for you to see AEW and that title being brought up?
Well, of course, Jay. For me, you know, I've wanted to see that marriage take place from day one, right? I really think that the two companies could really benefit each other, and I would love to see the guys be able to go back and forth between the two. Jericho did come out wearing the AEW title, so you did get to see the visual. They didn't make him keep it hidden away or anything like that, and I thought that really added to it. But now, in the big picture, though, I mean, I don't think anybody really expected Jericho to lose the match. So.
Right.
In terms of that, I don't know how much it adds, but I do love the fact that they went through Tony Khan, they talked to him, was it okay for them to do this, and Tony Khan said yes. And so, like you say, you put it perfectly. The door is opened at least a crack, and now we can see both sides, and hopefully it will lead to something down the line. The only thing is, it is tricky, especially if New Japan wants to make new inroads into North America.
Yeah.
You don't want to be seen kind of as maybe a partner of someone else, right? So it's very tricky how they would be able to do it and make it benefit both promotions. That's the tough part. But as a wrestling fan, I would love to see the two companies work together.
Now, as far as AEW goes, of course, Jon Moxley was also a part of the event. He won back his IWGP US title when he defeated Lance Archer. This was a title he never actually lost, but he had to surrender it because he was unable to get to Japan due to a tsunami. Like a legit tsunami.
Yeah,
so they just pulled the bell from him, never mind the 30-day thing. once again, this was a hardcore style match, though, as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. Really, for me, him winning the title and the angle that comes out of it was the big excitement for me, because they've set him up with Minoru Suzuki. And really, there's no one better to match up with Moxley in Japan, or certainly in New Japan, than Minoru Suzuki. He has the same sort of image. He's the rough, tough guy. He likes to battle a lot outside the ring. He's comfortable in those kind of plunder matches. And he's basically seen as almost the same sort of character as Moxley. He's the crazy guy that just does what he wants and doesn't really care what anybody else has to say. So I personally thought it was really great. And again, does this fact that they keep using Moxley, I wonder if that acts as a way that might be a relationship down the road. Because I really thought Moxley would be done after Wrestle Kingdom. I didn't really expect him to be kind of still part of the program after this show, but he is. So perhaps the relationship will happen.
Well, I think the deal with Moxley was, I get the sense that the New Japan deal may have been in place first, and then AEW deal came around. I mean, if you look at all the New Japan events that have been announced in the U.S., Moxley's not a part of any of them.
So right, it's like, that's true, but that's part of the stipulation of the contract, right?
Right, like when he's in North America, he's an AEW performer. When he's in Japan, he's a New Japan performer, and that seems to be the way that both him and perhaps Jericho, both of their contracts play out.
Right.
Now, one of the things that New Japan did do with the two nights is they interconnected the two nights by having Jay White face Naito for the IC title on night one, and then the winner of that faced the winner of night one's main event between Okada and Obushi. This ended up being Naito winning both championships on the second night, defeating Okada the first double champion in New Japan history, correct? Was this the right move to go about and, you know, kind of work out a tournament bracket with Naito coming out on top here?
Yeah, well, see, this is something, Jay, that they've actually wanted to do for years. They wanted to kind of put Naito in this really top spot almost like 3 or 4 years ago, and certain things didn't work out the way they wanted to. People got injured. They couldn't work things out the way they wanted. And the fans have actually wanted Naito in this position for a long time. So I'm not surprised that they finally pulled the trigger on it. The thing is, with Gato, he books so far in advance. I think after not initially being able to do what he wanted back a couple of years ago, that this has been where he's been leading all this time. And I personally thought it was great. I thought it was really well done. That was a great example of using the 2 days to move the angle along right until the final show. And the fans went absolutely nuts when Naito won both championships. And it means a huge deal, like you said, never been done in New Japan before, where guys held two belts and they're not unified. There's still two separate belts. It wasn't a unification thing. There's still two separate belts. And then, again, just having the angle coming out of it with Kenta attacking Naito afterwards and setting up that program and the heat that Kenta got, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I thought they did a great job in setting stuff up for the rest of the year now.
Now, that had been criticized, though, Mouth. I mean, you have this big angle, and you describing it right there makes it seem so important with Naito finally, you know, getting both belts, plus, you know, you finally have him get up to this level. And then there was the critique about it was that there was not enough room for celebration, and perhaps you could have held on for Kenta to do the attack at New Year's Dash as opposed to doing it at the second Wrestle Kingdom night.
Well, I mean, they did, but that's true, I suppose. But I didn't have a problem with that. I didn't have a problem with that. I thought it was really well done. I thought the reaction to Kenta was astounding. People were booing him out of the building. I thought it was good. And besides, they did use New Year's Dash to further the angle anyways, because there was a tag team match with Naito and Kenta on opposite sides. And they used that to build up as well. So, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really have a problem with that. I think seeing the reaction to Kenta and how hot the fans were to boo him and see him as the heel, I thought it was fantastic. I don't think it it really needed a big, like, over the top celebration. I don't know. I kind of liked the immediacy of Kenta just coming out and getting in his face right away. Kind of the idea that, yeah, you've won, but now you've got somebody coming after you already.
Now, as Kenta, he was someone that last year, you know, people had rated him one of their favorite moments of the year, being his heel turn, but that didn't take place in New Japan. So saying, you know, seeing Kenta in New Japan, was that a surprise for you?
A little bit. I mean, he's never worked in New Japan before. He's always been, he was an All Japan and Noah guy, right, for years. And then he came to North America, did a bit in Ring of Honor, and then he had his somewhat disastrous run in the WWE due to injuries and bad booking and stuff like that. But no, I have no problem. And the outsider angle always works really great in Japan. The fans really get behind when someone comes in from another company, and they really see that as kind of a nasty thing, and they always seem to get right behind it. And seriously, the heat that Kenta had at the New Year's Dash show afterwards, the crowd was just insane. They were just like booing him, and he was playing off it so well. He was almost playing off it as well as Jericho does when he does his stuff in AEW. He totally was playing the crowd, making fun of them, telling them to boo him, I thought it was really well done myself. I liked kind of the immediacy of it. I'm not too worried that they didn't give Naito a huge celebration. I think him just winning the match and getting there is kind of the celebration.
So coming out of these three shows, I suppose, including New Year's Dash into it, what do you think about New Japan's prospects for 2020? It looks like, to me, from a bit more of an outsider, it seems exciting for the fans of the product, particularly in Japan, but as far as expansion to the U.S., I don't see this being very positive in 2020.
Well, I agree with you. I think for New Japan, I think it's going to be really good. And they've set up some cool feuds and angles, but none of that stuff's going to carry through to North America. And in fact, if you look at the matches that they have booked for February for North America, they're not very attractive. Most of the New Japan guys that you'd want to see in singles matches are all in big tags. And then a lot of the card is filled out with ROH guys. And it's, I don't know. I think they're going to have real trouble with those shows. I just don't think there's stellar enough lineups that the people are going to be interested in going to them.
I also think they have a huge challenge with not having television here. I mean, as far
of
as,
course.
You know, they had access, and even though that wasn't the greatest amount of television, it at least was television and put them into the North American, not even North American, you know what? Put them into the American market, the U.S. mm-hmm. market, because access isn't up here in Canada.
Right.
And not
right.
like they're running shows up here in Canada, but it just seems they just don't have a mainstream outlet now, barring them developing a partnership with another organization. And I guess it's Ring of Honor, but let's face it, that's doing much for them.
No, that's the thing. Unfortunately, yeah, Ring of Honor is at the very bottom of the ladder right now. There are very few eyes on that product at the moment. So, yeah, exactly. That's why I think a lot of those shows are going to have trouble selling, because out of a couple guys outside of, you know, maybe Jeff Cobb and a couple guys, there's not many guys that are going to be featured in those matches that people really want to see. So it is going to be a hard sell. And getting the television for New Japan, that is going to be really, really hard, because really there are no outlets here in North America that could give them the exposure that they would want. And plus, you know, unlike AEW, which has at least one foot kind of rooted in what people expect pro wrestling to be in North America, you won't have that with New Japan. And it would be an even tougher job for them to kind of get New Japan as a product over. As we've seen, of course, over in North America, they really would have to really focus on it. And I don't think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough go. Anyhow, Lavransky, thank you for sacrificing all of your Christmas break watching these shows to report
on it. Hey,
man,
you know what? It was not a sacrifice, Jay. It was all three shows had great matches, had great highlights. You know, I want to mention quickly, there was a match on New Year's Dash between Goto and Ishii against Takagi and Evil that was just fantastic. Fantastic. If any of you out there skipped New Year's Dash, you should watch the show just for that match alone.
Well, you will be back here for the Royal Rumble night, in which we will see two matches that just got a lot more interesting this week, with Brock Lesnar going in number one.
Yes, definitely. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the champion going into the Rumble, it's very bizarre. And now, of course, everyone's trying to figure out who's going to throw him out.
Spending this whole show talking about it, Lavransky. So I'll chat with you in a couple weeks. And if you want to hear Mouth, he is, of course, joined by Joe Aguinaldo every week on All Elite Weekly, doing the podcast there, recovering AEW. Thanks, Mouth.
Okay, take care, Jay. See you later.
Don't go anywhere. Still a whole nother hour to come. And in that hour, Dave Meltzer joins us next to talk more Japan, as well as take a deeper dive into the WWE product and what the Brock Lesnar stipulation at Royal Rumble means for WrestleMania. We'll do that. And after that, RJ City still to come. Bartender Dave still to come. And your feedback. All of that in our second hour. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. Right now, you're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event, and you're hearing this ad. Yep, it's a commercial. And it could be your commercial. We've got sponsorship packages available to suit any budget, so I could be talking about what you're selling. For more information, email me, jason@snmeradio.com. Get the message out about your product or service to thousands of listeners via TSN Radio and around the world with our podcast. It all starts with an email to jason@snmeradio.com.
Well, good morning, everyone. Hello. This is not live. This is taped, as you can tell, because it's a special occasion. I have a lovely guest with me. Please say hello to Mr. Stephen Austin. Hello, Stephen.
I don't like when anybody calls me Stephen. Call me Steve.
Mr. Steve Austin.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event, and as you guys who listen to the show know, every Sunday morning I broadcast Sunday Morning Trivia on News Talk 1010. I have my social media up. Well, this morning, my social media included one RJ City in his underwear, and that is normal on Sunday mornings. It pops up on my Facebook feed. Today, the weird part about it was the man standing beside him was Stone Cold Steve Austin. Of course, I, much like you, probably thought it was a Photoshop, but it's not. So I immediately got this gentleman on the line, not Stone Cold, don't have that, don't have those connections. RJ City, on the line right now. Well, how are you standing in your underwear with Stone Cold Steve Austin beside you?
Well, as you know, I'm dear, dear begrudging friends with David Arquette.
Yes.
And he and I were in the Los Angeles area. We're working on our memoir together. And we like to speed walk every morning. You know, nothing too intense. Don't want to run. It impacts the joints. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, this guy in this, all this camo, he's wearing different types of camo. He's got black and white camo shorts, and then he's got the green camo jacket. I don't know how you camouflage it, two different types of camouflage. He was on his porch, and we were speed walking by, and I said, "Excuse me, sir, do you have the time?" And he said, "Are you RJ City?" And I said, "Well, yes. I mean, not while I'm speed walking. I like to just be myself." And then we got to talking. It turns out he's a wrestler and an actor, and he hosts a show or something. And he said, "Are you guys in the mood for some coffee?" Because we really hit it off. And he said, "Sure." So we got in. I said, "You know, it's very hot from all the speed walking." So I had to disrobe, as I am often wont to do. And David happened to turn on the camera, and what you see is what you see, and it didn't quite go according to plan.
Well, I mean, I'm going to call you on a lie right there, RJ, because there was no coffee involved in the clip that I saw.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there was. Well, I kind of made a mistake. I called him perhaps by the wrong name. And perhaps if I had been a little more respectful and showed him a little more deference, then we would have had a good old-fashioned brew. Or maybe of his broken skull IPA.
Yeah,
who knows?
Yeah, please bring some of that home for me, actually. Yeah. I haven't tried it as of yet. Okay, so, I mean, what actually did happen here? The fact that you are in L.A., and I've been following you on Instagram. You're hanging around with Arquette. You guys had done some bar wrestling down there. And you did meet with Steve Austin. It's not a Photoshop. I think we really do need to state that this is real. There's a clip posted right now. But along with that, there's more to it. You and David are on his podcast that's coming up this week.
Yeah, I believe it comes out Tuesday.
Okay.
I guess everyone has a show, so we did a little show swap, and it was a delightful time. I have not met the man before. He did greet me with RJ City, "How are you, you son of a bitch?"
Okay, expected,
which I thought was great. There was instant rapport. And then we talked about a great many number of subjects, and I would think, if I'm dropping, you know, references to old celebrities, as I do enjoy doing, I would think the last guy who would get them is Steve Austin. But I was so wrong. We are connecting on a different level. There's a good discussion in there about Paul Lynde and Jerry Lewis. So if you ever wanted to hear Steve Austin say the name Paul Lynde, probably check out his podcast on Tuesday.
Okay, which is really cool that I managed to talk to you right before that comes out, because there's nothing like a podcast promoting another podcast promoting a podcast. That's fantastic.
Yeah, this is Inception, just with a lot less money.
Yeah, yeah, or none at all. Yeah. I named you my best non-wrestling performer of 2019. And yes, you are a wrestler. I got to see you this year with Dalton Castle in Mississauga, Destiny Wrestling. If you can call that a wrestling match, which I'm not sure if you could. And
right.
I just wanted to talk to you about, like, everyone knows listening to this cast, we're buds. You do comedy shows with me as well when you're in Toronto. What are you trying to do? Is really what I'm asking. A lot of guys will go out there on the indie scene, grind it out every day, doing a match, maybe two times a day, 7 days a week. Plus, they're hitting the gym. And I mean, looking at you, it's clear that you hit the gym. You are in the ring, but what are you trying to do with the way you're promoting yourself? Because it's very different than anything else that I've seen out there.
It's really anti-promotional in the sense that I said to myself, I see what's out there. I've taken a good close look at a little bit of everything. And quite frankly, personally, and it's not a knock on anyone or anything, personally, I'm bored with doing wrestling in the traditional way. So what you're seeing is a man who is simply trying to entertain himself. And where that leads me, I don't know. But so far, it's led me to some wonderfully strange places. I always like to go left and say, well, if everyone's going this way, what if I go that way? Mm-hmm. Let's just this is a sociological experiment at this point. Wrestling seems to be able to be kind of anything you want it to be if you're able to think that way. So like when you saw me and Dalton wrestle and we spent the whole match plugging our comedy show the next day, why can't that be wrestling? It's a good question. We can move. We can throw arm drags just like anyone else, and we do these other things. So don't hold it against me.
I'm not holding it against you. I'm fascinated by it. But, I mean, you do have people that when I posted that clip with your match with Dalton, I, again, enjoyed what you guys did and were positioned properly on the card for it. But there's a lot of people who say, that's not wrestling. What is this garbage? How do you respond to that?
Okay, don't have to watch it. However, I will also say there are a lot of people in the world who are not watching wrestling. The way wrestling is right now, there are millions and millions and millions of people, and maybe they used to watch it before in the 90s or in the 80s, and they don't watch it now. You've seen the numbers. The business is kind of getting smaller, even though, you know, it looks like it's getting bigger. There's certainly more wrestling. It's expanding, but it's not necessarily getting a bigger audience. So, and maybe that's a sign, you know, that if more people are not tuning in, maybe that's because it's what's going on is not connecting with people. So at least just respect that I'm doing something different just to see what happens. If I have to be the canary in the minefield and years from now there's a hologram of Andre the Giant plugging a comedy show, then, you know, my work will be respected.
So what's next? Like, where do you go from here? I'm on the air every week saying one of my wishes, my Christmas wish, actually, for 2019 was to see you on my television. Not watching on a YouTube clip, but on my television with an organization giving you airtime, doing I don't know what. Listen, I don't know if that's in the ring because you may be better utilized outside of the ring. But, you know, what's next for you?
What is next? Well, I have a few, this is very LA sounding. I have a few projects I'm working on that will be coming out soon. The David Arquette documentary, which is called, well, I plug everything, You Cannot Kill David Arquette is the name of the documentary.
Okay.
And Lord knows I've tried. That's coming out. We're doing a bunch of work and weirdness with that. And listen, if anyone wants to, A, give me a decent amount of money. B, give me a substantial amount of catering. And C, hand me a microphone and not a script. I may be interested. So I think that's the challenge. Listen, if there are companies out there that don't want to sign me, I kind of don't blame them. I'm like, meh, I see that. I'm not going to be upset about it. But I will continue to do my own shit. It is the democratization of technology that I have the same platform. We're all on YouTube. Me, WWE, Impact, Ring of Honor, NWA, All Elite, we are all on YouTube. You can find me, you can follow me, and you can literally just watch me and I will get paid. That's the way the world is working, and I'm going to try to make it work to my favor. And, you know, it come what may.
RJ City is where you can find him on Instagram, at RJCity1 on Twitter, and just Google for the YouTube. RJ, thank you very much for being so entertaining in all of the weirdest of ways.
Jason, I first heard your voice when I was in the 8th grade, and it has warmed my heart ever since.
That's a true story. That is a true story. All right, thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Bartender Dave still to come, and your feedback. Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio. Thanks for listening to the free version of Sunday Night's Main Event. Well, that was just hour one, but if you want hour two, then please sign up to our Patreon, patreon.com/SNMEradio. It's just $1 a week. You get the full two-hour show, commercial-free, and along with that, all of our bonus podcasts that include The Midweek Markout, All Elite Weekly, Sunday Morning Trivia, and Dan Lavransky's Music Show. All of that comes to you for just $1 a week. So go get it right now. Patreon.com/SNMEradio.